Hey everyone, welcome to Withering Effect. This is episode 54, and today's date is July 19th, 2020, and I am Duds, or Duds Versus, known to the rest of the interwebs.
And I'm Jimbo. You may know me as Jimbo Slice 23. And this week, we have a very special guest, member of the Hermitcraft server, Wells Knight. Welcome to the show, Wells.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Did we make sure we have Wells Knight and not Hell's Knight?
Yeah, which one?
He's probably lingering somewhere.
Oh, boy.
Watch your back.
All right, Wells, well, you normally start the show on what we did have done this past week. Is there anything you could talk about without spoiling?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been chipping away little by little at the next Hermitcraft episode. Mm-hmm. My sister-in-law was down visiting us early in the week as she kind of passed through to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Been playing a little bit of Total War in my off time, helping the wife with the garden a little bit. Spending time with the dog, and that's pretty much it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Another day.
Sounds like a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
See, I've got a problem. So my dog likes to lay next to my desk when I'm recording.
My dog is literally laying next to my desk as we speak.
Do you have to every once in a while edit the dog noise out, or you just let it go?
I just let it go. On the rare occasion, right now she's just taking a nap.
Mm-hmm.
She's got like a, we've got like a little, it's not like a doggy bed, but it's like a place. I don't know how to explain it. We call it her place.
At this point, Susie's like one of the show hosts.
My dog makes so much noise.
If she were to do anything, say anything, it's just, she's just putting in her 2 cents.
Yeah. She's got like a, it's like an elevated dog bed, right? And it just sits next to my desk and she's just taking a nap at the moment. Just chilling out till I open the string cheese next to me and then she'll be super alert right next to me, staring.
Yeah. Well, Jimbo, how about you? How's your week been?
I've been paranoid all week, Duds.
Yeah.
I've been on the Ripple Effect server. Omni started this game to where everyone on the server would put in a diamond block, and there is like a loop to where you have a target and you have to hit them with a poison potion. If you hit them with a poison potion, they're out and you get their target. And meanwhile, I'm somebody's target. So you have to be careful where you go, what you do. You got to stay away from everyone. Every time someone wants to talk to you, you got trust issues, you know. But it's a lot of fun. But my game's over. I'm out of the game.
Spoilers.
Well, you'll find that my episode comes out actually yesterday. So you'll find that then. But
I didn't see a notification for that.
But it'll be Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this comes out on Wednesday. But
gotcha.
Yeah, that was about it. I did go to a cookout yesterday, and I probably don't have to eat for the rest of the week. So what about you? How's your week been?
I didn't stuff my stuff full like that, but when it came to Minecraft, built a Wither Rose farm with Carl. That was scary. Many clenched butt cheeks throughout that entire thing. There's nothing like spawning a wither knowing you have no plans on killing it, or knowing that if it gets loose, you have no way of killing it. So,
yeah,
that was scary. But the farm went pretty easy. We used Rayworks design, and we put it up so quickly, the time-lapse footage was basically useless.
Mm.
If I were to have sped it up, it would have been less than 10 seconds.
Wow, is that quick?
It went really fast. I mean, we had all the materials placed, ready to go. We knew we only wanted to spend one night doing it, so we kicked it. Carl started on one, and I started on another, and when I didn't have anything to do, I was lighting up islands around it and stuff. Most of my weekend was spent designing the shop for the Wither Roses, which was a bit of a struggle. I know you kept getting spammed with pictures like, hey, is this all right? How about this? This is another one.
I don't mind. It's looking good, the design so far.
I think so, and Crocs helped us out. He donated a ton of bricks. First question was, are you going to use these bricks to sell, or are you going to build something? I went, build something? He went, good. And he just gave me a shulker box full of bricks. So yeah, whatever we have left over, we'll make sure to give back. Yeah, that's kind of it for my week. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it was a busy week. Put episode 2 out. That was a lot of Jimbo.
Oh yeah, it was all over.
Yeah, a lot of scripted stuff, which was fun to play with first, because we really haven't done much. Well, you did a little bit more scripted last season than I did.
Yeah, it's fun to script some things, you know, collab with others, try to make some kind of story out of out of your content. I know, Wells, mm-hmm. you're familiar with collabing and, you know, scripting stories out. You have the Hell's Knight. That was a pretty cool.
That's not scripted at all.
Oh.
100% real.
Of course. So I can't believe I confused that.
How dare you try to show behind the curtain, Jimbo? I've been watching the you and Beef doing a lot of the little scripts together.
Mm-hmm.
Or skits, and the way you guys kind of bounce off each other feels very natural, and I really have been enjoying that.
Yeah.
You know, and the funny thing about the stuff with Beef and I is mm-hmm. that very little, if any, of that is actually scripted.
You guys are just like, we're going to start here, but we got to end here, and we just make it all up in between?
Pretty much. Yep, it's just pretty much all just off the cuff, spontaneous. You know, we'll basically, you know, I'll message him, and I'll be like, or, you know, or Beef, I think the most recent one was like him buying leather or something.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, Wells, I need to buy some leather. I'm like, all right, cool. We meet up. And that was the only part we scripted, was that he was going to buy leather.
Nice.
Yeah. You know?
Well, and see, then it makes sense for why it feels so natural, because it's not scripted at all. And you guys really just bounce off each other that well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think Beef and I have really good chemistry as far as, you know, making content together, for sure.
I agree. A lot of everyone on the Hermitcraft server, definitely the chemistry is there, and you can tell it likes working together. It's obvious in the forefront. If there was ever an issue with people, like, you'd see it on camera. That's why you guys don't ever have issues. It's like, it would be in your face that there was.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously there's some people who are who have more chemistry with each other than others, right? You get like Iskall and Rendog together. Those guys have chemistry in droves, you know, because they go so far back. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, me and Beef actually go back quite a ways as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, compare that to like me and, I don't know, False, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing against False at all. But her and I just haven't really done a mm-hmm. ton of stuff together over the years. You know, we do, time zones are kind of a nightmare when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely got to consider that.
So, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of chemistry in the group for sure.
That's one reason I kind of gravitate to Jimbo. Not only are we in the same time zone, but I've been working with this guy for almost 2 years now, between YouTube mm-hmm. and now with a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice that Carl was able to jump in, because we didn't know Carl till we went to Ripple Effect, and he was able to kind of just slide right in there easily.
Yeah.
Normally, we cover Minecraft news right now. There's a snapshot 20W29A, but it's a lot of technical stuff, and anyone who is listening understands me and Jimbo are not technical Minecraft players.
No, not really.
I mean, I am. I'm like the most technical of all technical Minecrafters. All
right. Well, these are a lot of subfiles for world creation and customization that I couldn't even begin to explain. So
command blocks.
Yeah. My plan was to skip over that. And I wanted to talk about sodium, because one, we talked about that last episode and I made the mistake of saying he. Sodium was created by a she. So that's my fault. I'm going to go ahead and say that up front. And the program she designed has worked fabulous for me.
Nice.
It's a great alternative. Now, there are extra steps compared to Optifine, and no, you don't get the shaders, and no, you don't get the zoom button.
Oh.
I saw a jump of at least 100 frames on my computer, which is really nice. Carl installed it on his Mac, and he only got like a 5-frame increase.
I do just want to jump in here and say that although it was only 5 frames per second more, it was a consistent 5 frames a second. So with Optifine, I find that it drops to like from like 55 to 38 quite a lot. Where with Sodium, it's consistently at 60 FPS. So I think it's more hardware limitations of the Intel integrated graphics in a Mac. But Sodium, really good so far. And also for the Zoom key, check out Logical Zoom from friend of the show, Logical Geek Boy. Now back to Duds making fun of me for playing Minecraft on a Mac.
This goes back to me making fun of Carl for playing Minecraft on a Mac.
Yeah. He gets it.
I'm sure he'll edit me in like a donk noise whenever I say it. But if you are looking for an alternative to Optifine, I can recommend Sodium. I thoroughly tested it this afternoon, went through the end and everything. Now, if you have a laggy server, kind of like we do, it's not going to help you. Chunks are still going to load super slow and everything. But when the chunk does load, everything in the chunk will load, and it'll be there waiting for you, which is really nice. So you see the mountain you're getting ready to fly into and splat on.
gives you a chance to dodge it.
Yeah, that's kind of it for the Minecraft news. Hang on, I gotta get Sims. I just was talking great about you, and now you're gonna interrupt the podcast.
She wants to talk about sodium.
Yeah. So we're gonna go ahead and skip over the notes. If you guys have a question about sodium in the Discord, let me know. There were a little bit of a complication to install it, but that was me being dumb. And if you need help, I'll walk you through how to install it. It's real easy.
Multi-MC is the answer to all of your installation problems forever. It's the greatest launcher ever made. I use Multi-MC exclusively for mod packs, vanilla, you name it.
I wasn't using that, so the fact that you gave it the seal of approval kind of makes me want to go download it.
Multi-MC is seriously a godsend. It is so good and so useful. Like, the ability, as a content creator, you generally play in a wide variety of different worlds that have different settings, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you've got a modded server that you play on, and then you've also got this other modded server that you play on, and then you've got your single-player world that's in snapshots, and then you've got this server that you play on with a group of friends that isn't in snapshots, and then, right? So you've got all these different worlds with all these different settings. Multi-MC, you create essentially an instance for each one. It's just an icon you click on. If I want to log into Hermitcraft, I click on the Hermitcraft one, and I go into Hermitcraft, and that has all my settings for Hermitcraft. If I want to play Kingdoms, I click on the one for Kingdoms. It has all my settings for that. If I want to play modded, you know, Pixelmon or whatever, I click on that. It's got all the Pixelmon stuff ready to go. Piece of cake.
Nice.
Easiest thing in the world. And then for installing Fabric, Forge, all the various things you might want to install, right? I believe Sodium runs off of Fabric.
It does.
Mm-hmm. You click on an edit button, and you click one button, and you're done. Do you want to install Fabric? Yes. Done.
Wow.
Nice.
Like, it's the easiest thing in the world. Multi-MC. Like, it's all I use. I don't even use... I haven't even opened the vanilla launcher in, like, 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I like easy.
This works out great, because I was wanting to download the replay mod and get into that, but it's the... having to use another launcher and stuff was kind of the downfall. But from what you're saying, I don't have to worry about that now. Multi-MC's got me covered.
Multi-MC has you covered. Just download Multi-MC, you install it. Obviously, you still need like a legitimate Minecraft account that you can log into and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But you just, you know, you click a thing, you create an instance. It says, what version of Minecraft do you want to play? You'd say 1.16.2 or whatever. You know, whatever we're on now. I don't even pay attention anymore. And then, you know, once you have that created, you can choose to, you know, install Forge, install Fabric, add whatever mods you want to add. Like, it's super, super easy.
Nice.
And there's an abundance of tutorials out there that you can look up if you need to.
Great. So now I have my tomorrow figured out what I'm spending the evening doing.
Yeah, it makes me want to check it out as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the advice, Wells. I'm definitely going to be jumping all over that.
I just installed Replay Mod and Optifine with the OptiFabrics.
Mm-hmm.
And all that's running fine, but I've never come across the Multi-MC. So, yeah, that's definitely good to know.
Multi-MC.org. You can put it in the show notes.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go. I was going to say, we're going to pull up a link through that in the show notes for Carl, but Wells is ahead of us. You can't be better at our own show, Wells. Come on.
I mean, too late?
Yeah.
It's a little too late.
Basically. No, thank you. Because that's going to make my life easier. That was the one thing holding me back on Replay Mod was having to work multiple launchers.
Yeah.
Now knowing I don't have to, that's sweet.
Yeah, Multi-MC is amazing. Like, I can't even go without it at this point.
Another non-sponsor, by the way, but good to know.
Anyways, let's get into our Discord. Words. They're hard. This week's Discord ad is from Link, so go ahead and take it away, Link.
Hello there, miners and crafters. This is Link. Come and join me on the Withering Effect Discord. It's a great place to hang out with the people that work on the show and other fellow listeners like yourselves. The link is in the show notes. Join today, and let's discuss the game we love.
All right, thanks again, Link, and for anyone else who wants to record a Discord ad, just hit me, Jimbo, or Carl up. We'll get you hooked up with the script, nice, easy. It's awesome. And we thank you guys so much for doing it, because it means a lot that we have such an active Discord with everyone talking and doing things, such as participating in Block of the Week. You like that smooth segment? It was bumpy as a dirt road.
The smoothest of segues.
Yeah. Anyways, we asked you guys to vote in the Discord like we do every week on Block of the Week. This week, your choices were Blast Furnace, Shulker Box, or Beacon.
And the winner this week is... Beacon. Congratulations, Beacon. Checking out the votes here. Yeah, it was a landslide. Beacon won with 34 votes. The Blast Furnace had 13, and Shulker Box only had 9.
I had a cool fix for the Shulker Box, too. Why can't we have netherite Shulker Boxes so they don't burn in lava?
Yeah, that's not a bad fix.
Yeah.
I'd be up for that. But before we get into it, let's go over some things I have written down for the beacon. It is crafted with a netherite star, 5 glass blocks, and 3 obsidian. Provides status effects such as speed, jump boost, haste, regeneration, resistance, or strength to nearby players. A beacon is a block that projects a light beam skywards. A beacon pyramid can be made from a 3x3 platform to a 9x9 platform in a pyramid shape for maximum ability. So you can stack those up 9x9, 7x7, 5x5 to 3x3 underneath the beacon. The pyramid can be used, can use up to 164 precious blocks such as iron, gold, emerald, diamonds, and netherite. And the beacon beam can be seen up to 255 blocks away.
Now the fun part. How to, I guess, improve the beacon. And honestly, there's one thing that I've always wished the beacon could do, and that's stop mob spawning. Yeah, I know it produces a light level of 15 by itself, and technically that could stop, but it's like, if you could have a perk that was, like, anything within the beacon radius, no mobs could spawn there, I think that would be kind of cool. It'd be great late game.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even great early game if you somehow manage to get the materials for it.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get a netherite beacon, you deserve to stop mob spawning, if you could pull that off. Even a diamond beacon would be impressive.
For me, everyone likes playing with light levels. That's why mushroom biomes are so popular. So I think it would be great to have a feature where you could just stop mob spawning in a beacon radius.
Yeah.
Another thing would be to have the ability to get the beacon's abilities and disable the beam, because let's face it, the beam's probably the least attractive part of the beacon.
Be distracting sometimes.
I think there are a couple easy improvements.
Yeah, go for it.
So first of all, the texture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is a bacon. So just, you got to give it a bacon texture.
All right.
Right? It's an obvious, I mean, everyone says bacon mining, right? What are you doing? I'm bacon mining. Well, it doesn't look like bacon. So everything is improved with bacon, therefore give it a bacon texture. Easy improvement.
Bacon's delicious also.
It is. On a more serious note, two improvements. First of all, I think it would be great if you could extend the maximum range,
mm-hmm.
bump it up to where you can make, you know, an 11x11 platform at the bottom and extend the range out even further.
Yeah,
I can see that.
I think in today's 2020 Minecraft, that's a valuable thing. And I think that would be good. The other thing is there's actually a number of potion effects that aren't available from the beacon. Like, what about slow falling? You could do some really cool stuff with mini games with a slow falling beacon.
True. Didn't even think about that.
Those two improvements would be the big ones for me, is make it possible to make it an even bigger range and then add all the various potion effects that make sense. I don't know how you would do like instant health potion as a beacon effect, but you know, add the other potion effects that are missing to the beacon.
Be cool to have like a Dolphin's Grace beacon effect for the water, mm-hmm. or maybe that could be added to a conduit. I don't know.
Yep. Or if you had multiple beacons, you could get the effects would like stack. So if you had like 2 haste 2 beacons, you'd get essentially haste 3.
Ooh.
Like that could be cool too.
And instant mine ores that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that.
That would be cool. Awesome. Well, Jimbo, do you have any improvements or shall we move on to the Q&A section?
No, I don't have any improvements. I do want to mention that, you know, the beacon does make a really good lamp if you want to use it that way. You know, you just don't have to use it. as a, an ability, but there's other ways to use the beacon. I've seen it lately on B00's channel, where he made that store, and he put the lamps up with the beacons. It's actually pretty comical. He likes to use them as lamps more than beacons, but yeah, there's other ways to use the beacons, and I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, on the Discworld Common Craft version, we had a really nice Wither Skeleton farm, so I ended up using beacons as a light source throughout my entire base. It was pretty cool. They are a fun block to play with.
If you're rich enough.
Yeah, if you can afford it. All right, so Q&A time.
Sure.
Jimbo, I'm going to let you ask your first question.
First question we have from Croc, and he asked, do you have a process for dealing with low motivation and burnout, or just ride it out and hope it works itself out?
I mean, to be honest, I'm probably the wrong person to ask, because if you're going through burnout, the last thing you want to hear is, like, just don't play for 8 months, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just came back from, like, well, not just, but a few months ago, I came back from essentially an 8 month break
of,
you know, from all things Minecraft, because I was so burned out in the game after playing it for 8+ hours a day, basically every day for like 5 years straight.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer that people who are asking that question want to hear is not just don't play, just take a break for a year, you know?
Yeah.
But there are things you can do to help mitigate it. I mean, first of all, there isn't anything wrong with taking a break. If you're not having fun, take a break.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other thing, too, is just sometimes it's not so much that you're burned out or that you're not necessarily motivated. It's just that you don't have any inspiration, right? You just, you just don't have any idea. What am I going to build? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what I want to build. And you can find inspiration from many, many different sources. Mm-hmm. That's available all over the place. You can find, you know, everything from history to television to YouTube videos to just look around. There's inspiration to be found all over the place. And that can help if you're trying to come up with an idea of something to do. Just look around and, you know, try to replicate something you see in the real world in Minecraft. And often when you are burned out, when you're struggling with that, all you really need to do is find a way to force yourself to start putting down blocks. And then once you start putting down those first couple blocks, you know, you start to get in a rhythm, and then the ideas start popping up again, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're good to go. Even if it's something as simple as just like, I'm going to make a pathway,
yeah.
you know, I'm going to make a path that connects this town to this town.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a super involved big idea type project, but sometimes that's all it takes. Sometimes, you know, you put down those first few blocks and you get going, and then suddenly you're like, oh, you know what? It'd be really cool if over here we put like a little camp. And then over here, maybe we put like a little cave. And then, you know.
Yeah.
For me, when I was finding burnout, I found one, just like you said, it was really inspiration. It wasn't so much burnout. It was I couldn't think of something to build. And what I found is I was rushing through like base building seasons. I was trying to build it as fast as I possibly could. And I realized I just needed to slow down and play Minecraft at an enjoyable pace. And mm-hmm. ideas would constantly flow because I was thinking more of about how I was building. It was, hey, maybe you don't build landscapes too well. Maybe you should concentrate on landscapes. And as I was building landscapes, I'm like, oh, well, this would work great with this kind of build on a wall or whatever. So I would start building that wall, and then that would lead into another idea for a tower or something like that. So, yeah, I think it's more inspiration than anything.
It can be. I think there's a distinct difference between burnout and lack of inspiration.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because burnout is where you just don't want to play Minecraft.
That's true.
You just, it's just not fun. It is almost mm-hmm. painful to just physically play the game, even if you have ideas,
mm-hmm.
right? You've got ideas of what you want to do. You just hate actually doing it. That's burnout. Whereas inspiration is just, you just don't know what to do. You want to do stuff. You just can't think of anything that sounds, you know, fun.
Yeah.
I think there's a difference between the two, and there's certainly a difference between the way that you handle each of those challenges.
And sometimes to get to that build that you're inspired to build, it takes a lot of work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like resource gathering, getting places prepped up. That's a job in itself, and it could, that'll dawn on you to get burnout also.
Mm-hmm.
Been there.
Well, Jimbo, I think you're going to have to ask your second question, because we've already kind of started answering it.
Yeah, I got a question from Fir Trees. It asks, where do you find your inspiration for your builds? Kind of covered it a little bit. Is there any more you'd like to add?
Yeah, I mean, everywhere. The answer is everywhere. You know, sometimes I'll be walking down the street. I'll be walking my dog and I'll see a house that looks really cool. I'm like, oh, that would make a cool Minecraft build, you know? Or I'll be looking, you know, sometimes I'll be like, I want to build something in a, I don't know, Victorian style. So I'll look at pictures of Victorian architecture and what that actually is supposed to look like. Or I'll, you know, maybe I'm watching a TV show and I see this really cool castle in this show. And I'm like, oh, I should try and build something like that. You know what I mean? Like, you can find inspiration absolutely anywhere. You just got to look around for it.
Mm-hmm. My favorite bit so far is my latest build, my spawn town house, just because I was an architecture student for a while, and I remember my architecture teacher saying A-frame houses are ugly and don't worry about designing them and stuff like that. So I was like, I'm going to build an A-frame house in Minecraft because, you know what? I can't.
Now the question is, was it ugly?
I'm pretty proud of this build, actually.
It turned out really good, yeah.
It's a nice, small starter house. It's not excessive, built with easy-to-grip materials, and it's going to be a good jumping platform for the main base this season.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, my idea this season is to build a giant spaceship. I've never done anything like that. It just kind of came to me. I want to build in the air. I want to build a spaceship. And when I got online and looked at different designs, like, the inspiration started coming then. I wasn't too inspired at first, but as I'm looking at all these different spaceships and I'm trying to come up with my own design, and I come up with one finally in creative, but yeah, just all the different designs, the interiors, the exteriors, it was very inspiring. So even if you have an idea ahead of time, it's a good opportunity to get online and inspire yourself even further.
I just can't wait to see how many times you fall from it as you're building.
I better have my wings on. Yeah.
I actually have a rule for myself that in vanilla, I will not build things up in the air. Yeah. I refuse to do it.
Even with the Elytra now.
Even with the Elytra. It's just so tedious.
It really
because
is.
Because, like,
yeah.
Because the way that I, and not, there's no like, or there's no like one right way to build, right? Mm-hmm. But the way that I build is I usually build kind of a framework, and then I sort of fill in the canvas, so to speak, like the base blocks, and then I go and add all the details and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which I think is a pretty common way that people build stuff.
Yeah.
But when you're building up in the air, getting down underneath to add detail and stuff like that is just so much of a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
I never thought.
Yeah, of it. I just straight up refused to do it. I'm like, nope. Modded, where you have, you know, modded Minecraft, where you have creative flight. Absolutely, I will totally build things in the air, but not in vanilla. Nope.
Yeah,
definitely got a challenge ahead of me.
All right. Well, we're gonna go with a little bit on those lines. We got a question from Maximum Forces, who asks, "What do you feel makes the Hermitcraft server one of the most cooperative groups of players?"
I think it's a combination of a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a certain level of professionalism that's expected.
Yeah.
You know, that people are going to respect other people's stuff, and, you know, everyone is there to make content together. You know, we have kind of one mindset, so to speak, when it comes to some of that kind of stuff. So that's part of it. A lot of the people on the server go back years, you know, and have been friends for ages.
Yeah.
And that's probably the biggest part, is that you don't get on Hermitcraft by submitting an application. You know, it's not a matter of you have good content and you submit an application and then you're on the server. Like, that's just not how it works. Maybe at one point way in the past, in the early seasons, it was a little bit more like that. But nowadays, it's who you know, right? If you're going to be on Hermitcraft nowadays, it's almost guaranteed that you are friends already with at least one, if not many, of the existing members.
Right.
So if you're only bringing in people that you know that you're going to work with, right, because you're already friends, you already have that chemistry, Like, that makes a huge difference versus bringing in, you know, random people who you don't, who you know who they are in their videos.
Yeah.
But you don't really know them personally at all. You know, maybe you've got YouTuber X who makes incredible videos, but then you bring them into the group and it turns out they're actually just a total jerk, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that issue. That's not a possibility because anyone who's being brought into the group at this point has a close friendship with one or more people already in the group. And we can all, you know, that person can already say, oh, I know this person. They're like this, you know, they're super chill or like whatever.
Yeah. Built in trust.
And I think that makes a huge difference versus a lot of servers where, you know, if you want to join, you submit an application and then, you know, you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you have good chemistry and maybe you don't. And you hope it works out for the best, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right. So our next couple of questions are kind of more behind the scenes stuff. So High Hopes asks, what is the most challenging aspect of being a full-time content creator? The time management, volatility, taxes, etc. And I know from your last episode, taxes are kind of a pain.
Taxes are a nightmare. and to be fair, that's not limited to YouTubers. That's basically if you are self-employed,
mm-hmm.
at least in the United States. I don't know how it is in other countries. I've had some people tell me that like, oh, yeah, I'm self-employed in Sweden and the taxes are easy. I click a button on the internet. Like, I'm like, I'm moving to Sweden.
Yeah.
but, you know, in the U.S., if you're self-employed, whether you're a YouTuber or any other self-employed job, taxes are a headache. But I mean, there's a lot of different challenges. YouTube is a kind of a dichotomy of extreme ups and extreme downs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so many incredible, awesome things about being a full-time YouTuber. And then there's also a whole bunch of things that are absolutely horrendous, right? Like you never get paid the same amount every month, ever.
Yeah.
Right? Like, do you know how hard that is to budget?
I can only imagine.
No, oh, yeah.
You know, you go into your accountant and they're like, okay, well, how much do you think you're going to make this year? You're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
How much do you think you should pay in for taxes this quarter? Well, I don't know. Well, what did you make this month? X amount. What about next month? I don't know. You know, that it's like that amount plus or minus the entirety of that amount. You know, like that's a huge challenge in and of itself. There's no health care. There's no benefits, no retirement plan. You know, any of that stuff is, you know, you have to set up your own 401k. You have to set up your own health insurance and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have no boss. YouTube can, which, you know, having your own boss or not having a boss, like that's personally something that I see as a benefit of YouTube is me being my own boss. But at the same time, like YouTube can just change things whenever they want and I have no say in it, you know?
Yeah.
So like there's good things and then there's bad. There's a lot of bad things. Like the YouTube is definitely not for everyone. I know it's like the dream job for a ton of people, but it's definitely not for everyone. Because you have to be the type of person who is incredibly, like, self-motivated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to be the type of person who is able to get up and go work and not have someone who's forcing you to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I can't – I mean, I suppose technically I could fire myself. But realistically
– yeah, it wouldn't go over very well.
What are the consequences for me if I just decide one day, like – I just don't feel like doing YouTube today. And then I'm just going to sit around on the couch and watch Netflix. Like, what are the consequences realistically? I'm not going to lose my job, you know?
Yeah.
And then what if I decide the next day I'm going to do the same thing? I'm not going to lose my job, you know? And that becomes a huge problem because like you get stuck. You have to be the type of person who says, okay, I'm going to get up today and I'm going to go make a video, right? I'm going to work on this episode or whatever. Mm-hmm. And not everyone can do that. Some people need structure. Right. They need to have a schedule where they've got a boss who's telling them you got to be in work. You got to be in at work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Some people need that. So like it's one of those things where depending on the type of person you are, YouTube can be an incredible job or it can be an absolute nightmare. And it's not all sunshine and roses. You know, there's some great stuff. Don't get me wrong. I love what I do. I get to be my own boss. I get to set my own hours. I get to take days off whenever I want to, realistically. You know, I can, you know, basically do my own thing, and that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
but then there's huge downsides to it as well.
Yeah. All right. So this question is going to be from Agent Paint. They ask, what advice do you have for people interested in making content? Also, to throw on top of that, because you, again, kind of hit on this question there, what does an average Wells Night episode look like behind the scenes, like going from planning stage to the uploaded stage?
So I'll tackle that one first. I'll tackle the average Wells Night episode first.
Okay.
And basically, it varies wildly from episode to episode.
All right.
There are some episodes that are super easy, right? I know what I'm going to do. I just got to do it. And it's done, right? Mm-hmm. There are some episodes where I'm like, okay, I have kind of a basic idea of what I want to do, but then I want to introduce this one character, and then I want to have a rap battle with this one character, so I got to write that, and then I got to find, you know what I mean? Like, the amount of time that goes into making a single episode varies wildly. Some episodes could take a single day to make. Some episodes could take a week and a half. Like, it just, it's totally dependent on the episode. I'd say now, with the way that I'm making content right now, I'm trying to get like 1 to 2 episodes out a week. And my rule, my viewpoint on that is, you know, cause for a long time, for ages and ages, YouTubers were told, you got to make daily videos, right? You got to put out a video every day. Yeah. Sometimes you got to put out 3 videos a day. You know what I mean? Which I did for a long time, you know, but now I'm looking at it more. And to be fair, YouTube has also changed their algorithms. So you don't actually have to do daily videos anymore to get anywhere, which is good. But now the way I look at it is it's okay to put out 1 video a week, but it should look like that video took a week.
Yes.
Right. Like, I don't want to put out a video once a week that looks like I threw it together in 30 minutes. You know,
right?
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, this is me just talking nonstop, no cuts, start to finish for 30 minutes. By the way, this came out a week after the last episode. Like, no, that's, you know.
Yeah, and I think your viewers can see that and will respond to that.
Absolutely. You can totally see the difference between a video that takes a week to make and has a week's worth of gameplay condensed and edited down into that one video versus a video that you throw together in, you know, an hour or two and then upload. So, you know, nowadays I'd say it takes me usually I have kind of an idea of what I want to do before I start the episode. And then I do a little bits here and there. You know, I record this, I gather the resources. I do a lot of stuff on stream, a lot of the air quotes off camera stuff.
Yeah.
For the video, I do that on stream, you know, gathering resources, mining out the stuff, the big build projects. If it's going to be a time lapse in a video, it was usually done on stream. And I used Replay Mod to just time lapse basically the entirety of the stream. Stuff like that. And then the editing process now, you know, it used to be that I would edit a video in 15 minutes. And now it takes me probably 4 hours to edit a video, four to six hours on average to edit a single video. Cause I do a lot more stuff, now than I used to. Cause, you know, back in the day, that makes me sound old, back in my day, you kiddies don't understand. No. You know, back then, that was the YouTube grind, was daily videos, you know, multiple videos per day for most channels. And that was what the algorithm wanted if you wanted to get anywhere on YouTube, which was awful, you know?
Yeah.
It was terrible because you're trying to put out 1 to 2 videos a day. You're backlogging like 3 weeks in advance. You're editing things at, you know, breakneck speed, and you're not necessarily going for quality so much as quantity, you know?
Right.
And that's thankfully changed now, where that's not the step you have to take to be, you know, air quotes, good at YouTube, according to YouTube.
When it comes to your editing process now, are you one of those that gets all the footage together and then goes through the whole episode and edits, or are you editing as you're recording?
I've done it both ways. It depends on the episode. What I like to do is I like to have, you know, I can generally get a good idea from like looking at the footage and just making sure, you know, okay, I've got enough footage here to make an episode. You know, when I edit this down, this is going to be 25 minutes or whatever, right? But there are some variables to that, like time lapses, right? Time lapse is going to be 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. You know, it depends. What if I've got three time lapses? You know, that's all replay mod footage. That's not footage that I can just look at the length of the footage and be like, okay, it's going to be this long. So, like, sometimes I'll edit as I go. Sometimes, usually, on most occasions, I'll get everything recorded and then I'll edit it all in one go.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it was a two-part question. So the other question, what advice do you have for people interested in making content for YouTube? There are two things that I tell people who are either just starting YouTube or are considering YouTube. And the first one we kind of talked about a little bit before, which is just start.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we talked about, you know, when you started, you had this like super janky setup. And when I started, I had this super janky setup and it was like Falses video or something like that that inspired you to, because you realized you didn't need like this super crazy, you know. The best advice I can give you is like just start, because the only thing you can't buy later on is experience, right? You can, you know, 2 years later, you can buy a new microphone or a new computer or a new whatever, right? But you can't buy 2 years of experience making videos.
Yeah. I don't think I know a single person who doesn't cringe at their first video. Anyways.
Oh, yeah. My first videos are awful.
Yeah.
They're straight up horrible. They're horrendous. You know, I mean, as I said, laptop, webcam, microphone, Windows Movie Maker. Like, what more do you need to say? But that was still experience. That was still part of the learning process, because there's so much learning about how to edit and how to sort of find your voice when it comes to commentary, right? Like, so many people struggle when they're first starting out. How do I talk for 30 minutes?
Yeah.
How do I not have all this dead air where I'm just, how do you commentate? You know, like, getting good at that takes a lot of practice. So, like, the first part of the advice is just start. It doesn't matter what you have. As long as you have a computer and a microphone of some sort, just start. It doesn't have to be a good computer. It doesn't have to be a good microphone.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a microphone, you can get a CAD U1 on Amazon for $25, and it's actually a fairly decent USB microphone. $25 on Amazon, US. Don't ask if you're in like Australia or something. Then you're just, you know, too bad.
Yeah.
you know, you don't need this crazy setup. Just start, because experience is the most valuable thing you can get when you're first getting started. And again, along with that, experiment. Right? Experimentation is a huge part of becoming confident and happy with your content on YouTube. You got to try things. Find out what works for you, right? Because everyone has kind of a different process for making stuff. So that's the first part of the advice. The other advice is more on the behind-the-scenes stuff. Learn absolutely everything you can possibly learn about YouTube as a platform, right? And the way that it works behind the scenes, algorithms, thumbnails, SEO, all that kind of stuff, upload dates, schedules, peak times, all this kind of really numbers-driven sort of air quotes boring stuff. Learn everything you can possibly learn about that, because what separates most big YouTubers from most small YouTubers is that. It's not content quality. I mean, it is to a degree, right? Like, generally, you won't become a very big YouTuber if you make horrible content. Generally, there are exceptions.
Yeah.
But you can make the greatest content in the world, and if nobody ever sees it because you don't know how to get it in front of people, because you don't know anything about the algorithm and how SEO works, then it doesn't matter if you're making great content, because if nobody ever sees it, no one knows that you're making great content.
Right.
You know, and that's the huge difference. You can make relatively average, okay content, or even, you know, fairly decent content. And as long as you know how to do the back end stuff on YouTube, you will do better as a channel, right? You'll perform better as a channel. Than someone who makes 10 out of 10 A-plus content but doesn't know anything about the back-end stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the difference maker, you know? So what the other thing that I tell people is learn absolutely everything you can about the back end side of YouTube, because that's what really makes the difference when it comes to growth and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, just have fun with it. But like, that's super cliche.
Yeah.
A lot of people ask like content creators, you know, hey, what should I do? I want to get started. You know, what advice can you give me? And they just say, oh, just have fun with it. Or they say, oh, just make good content. But like, those are the most cliche. Mm-hmm. Everyone's heard that at some point. Yeah. You know, you already know that. You're supposed to make good stuff. Okay. You already know you're supposed to have fun. Okay.
The one I get the most is make videos that you would want to watch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one's just make good content. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you become a big YouTuber? Oh, just make good stuff. If you make good videos, people will follow. Well, maybe.
Yeah.
That's a part of it. That's a small piece of the pie, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's a good answer.
All right, Jimbo, we're going to scroll back to you. You've got some questions now.
Before I get to that, I wanted to bring up the one time I remember, Wells, you put out multi videos in one day. Was on an April 1st where you did the pranks. I remember I saw the first one and I laughed.
Satire Sunday.
Yeah, the second one, I was like, oh my God, he's put out another one. I couldn't wait for the next one.
Yeah.
They were so good. Well, I loved it.
With those videos is that those were like 3-minute videos. Like every single one of those videos was like 3 minutes or less, right? And it was April Fool's, and it was four videos that were just satire. Every single one of them was essentially poking fun at a certain like YouTuber stereotype.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
The brand new YouTuber. The super annoying, over the top, ridiculously energetic, you know, punch that like button right in the face.
You know. 5,000 likes.
The diss track YouTuber. And then the half-baked apology. You know, I'm sorry. Buy my merch. You know, those were so much fun to make. Honestly, those were four of my favorite videos that I've ever made. They were just so much fun to make.
Yeah. Oh, man. I laughed so hard. I did like that.
Yeah, that was a good time. But there was a time years ago where I was uploading, you know, 3 30-minute videos a day. I'd be uploading like Hermitcraft, Kingdoms, and a modded series like every single day.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was brutal.
I can tell. I mean, it takes me a week to get through one of my episodes. So the fact that you were doing that in a day, I don't know how.
Yeah, and it was, corners were cut. Let's put it that way. In order to make that possible, there were definitely some corners that were cut.
So I'll go into my next question. This pertains to Hell's Knight. I was really excited to see this episode, and I was just curious, has rapping always been a talent of yours? Because you killed it, man.
The funny thing is, until Hermit Gang, a.k.a. The Super Weapon, Team Star, from season 5, or whatever it was.
The song that'll live in infamy?
Yeah, the song that was the first time I had ever rapped in my entire life. And after that, I did not rap again until Hell's Knight. So the answer is maybe. I don't know. Has it been a talent? maybe it has. An unexplored one. I come from a musical background. I've been in choir in some form or another since like first grade, since I was like a little kid. My mom is a choir director, so she was like, yeah, you will be in choir and you will like it.
Yeah.
And I liked it. So I was in every choir you can possibly think of, everything from like vocal jazz to show choir to concert choir to like you name it. I was in all the choirs, right? Barbershop quartets, all sorts of stuff. I was also a percussionist. I played drums, drum set. I was a drumline section leader in high school. So like rhythm and music. Yeah. Has been a huge part of my life for pretty much the entirety of my life. Mm-hmm. Now, as for rap, not so much. that was a little bit of a... Mm-hmm. That's definitely something that's outside of my comfort zone. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And like me, I'm a guy from a very small town in the Midwest, and I am pretty much the last person that you would look at and be like, that guy can rap. You know,
right. Yeah.
It's so outside of my comfort zone. But, you know, it was fun. It was a good time. And one of the things that I want to do this season on Hermitcraft is kind of push those boundaries of what I'm comfortable doing, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's where the experimenting comes in.
Exactly. You know, and that's the thing. You never stop experimenting as a YouTuber. You're always constantly trying to try new things and explore new styles of content, new different things. So even now, years after I started, years after I went full time, I'm still trying to do things that are new, you know, trying to push those boundaries of like, what am I comfortable with? What can you expect from Wells Knight when you watch a Wells Knight video? And the answer is, who knows?
Yeah. Obviously, you know, rapping wasn't one of
rap battles against yourself, you know?
And I got to ask you, where did that idea come? Because it doesn't seem like it would just be a natural idea to pop in your head like, oh, this episode, I'm going to rap battle myself.
Well, I mean, the rap battle part of it, I don't know. It just kind of popped into my head. But the evil twin trope, right, has been around in literature and media forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Jekyll and Hyde, evil twin trope. You know, Star Trek, the mirror universe, evil twin trope. You know, and on and on and on. You know, evil Exuma, evil twin trope. You know, it's a trope, a storytelling trope that has existed in storytelling for ages, right? Mm-hmm. For longer than any of us have been alive, like going back centuries, right? So like the idea of an evil clone of yourself, an evil version of yourself, is not exactly groundbreaking.
Right.
It's nothing new, right? It's been done many, many times. But I took some ideas from Star Trek, from the original series. There's an episode, I can't remember what it's called, but there's an episode of the original series where Kirk gets split into his good half and his evil half in a freak transporter accident. So I took some ideas from that, with the idea of like someone who personifies all the evil parts of you. You know, I took some ideas from evil Exuma. I took some ideas from all over the place, you know, just different ideas. As for the whole rap battle thing of it, I don't know where that came from, but it was just something like, I think I just started writing and it just kind of became like it. Did you ever get that where you get like this really just out there idea that just pops into your head and it won't go away?
Yes.
And you're just like, I'm doing it. That's kind of how it went. Like that whole rap was written and recorded in a single day.
Nice.
Wow. It's impressive.
Because it was just like, and it wasn't like, it was like a 16-hour day, but it was a single day. And then, you know, I did more editing of it and stuff like that later. But like that whole thing would just kind of, the inspiration was just there. And it just, once I started writing and putting words, you know, putting pen to paper, coming up with rhymes, you know, it just kind of flowed.
Mm. Yeah, it was a good flow.
And it was a lot of fun, you know, and it was the last thing that so many people expected. Which was great. Oh, you know, yeah. The reaction to it was like,
which
what?
Is awesome.
Bulls can rap?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you don't even know. I got bars.
It's definitely made, like, it's one of the most memorable Hermitcraft moments, not just in season 7, but it'll be remembered as one of those that whenever they're like, oh, Hermitcraft, people will think of Hermit Gang and obviously Hell's Knight versus Will's Knight.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going for, you know, because it's one thing to introduce the evil character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which in and of itself, I think, would be relatively memorable.
Yeah.
But then just, I'm going to rap battle myself. It's so out there for me that, yeah. Like, how can you, it's so memorable because it's just so out of the ordinary from what people expect from me.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And Jim, I'm going to let you ask your second question.
Yeah. I'm just curious again. What do you enjoy more? Exterior designing or interior designing? You're pretty good at both.
What are interiors?
Interior housing.
What is that? Have you seen like 99% of the inside of most of my builds?
I saw the one in your new one. And
that's pretty much the only interior I've ever done. not quite, but pretty close. I am notorious for building like a nice outer facade, and then the interior is just grass. Like, oh man, it's not even close. I enjoy exteriors way more. Interiors for me are something that like I can do, but it's not my passion, so to speak. You know, I see interiors honestly as more of a chore than something like super fun. Like, I don't wake up in the morning and go like, I'm gonna do the interior today and it's gonna be great. Like, that's not me.
I've always found if it's not a functional interior, I don't have any urge to do it.
Yeah, I wanted to do an interior for the Hermitcraft starter house, air quotes, starter house.
Yeah.
I wanted to do an interior for that one, but like, yeah, if you look at like the vast history of everything I've ever built, quite literally 99.9% of it does not have an interior.
We got time for one more question. It's kind of a vague open-end question, but what does the future of Minecraft look like for you?
I don't know. I mean, are we talking about like, what do I think Minecraft will look like in like 1.3? You know, 1.30? Are we talking about like what's Minecraft going to look like in version 1.30? Or are we talking about like, what do I plan to do with Minecraft in the future? Let me clarify that first of all.
More so the first way, like, what would you like to see out of Minecraft in the future? How about that?
Slabs and stairs for all the things. Easiest answer in the world.
Yes.
Slabs, stairs, walls, fences, trapdoors, all the things.
All the things.
More blocks.
Next question.
Well, there's not going to be a next question because you just dropped the mic.
That's all I want. That's all I want. Just like, why do we not have concrete slabs and stairs? It's concrete. Ugh. I go down a pair of concrete stairs every day when I leave my house to let out my dog. Like, why do we not have concrete stairs? You know?
Concrete is probably the one gripe I have more than anything, because it's the one material in the game that can literally be formed into anything.
Yeah, well, and then on top of that, concrete fulfills kind of a unique role in Minecraft. Like, modern builds in vanilla textures were so hard, before concrete was added to the game.
Yeah, everything was quartz.
Everything was quartz, and quartz wasn't a perfect block because it had those goofy grid lines in it, because we didn't have smooth quartz yet either. Like, it was so hard to make modern. I mean, the vast majority of modern builders prior to concrete just use a texture pack.
Yeah.
You know, the vast majority of them. And now modern builds are totally doable in vanilla because we have concrete, you know. And we have smooth quartz, and we have all these other wonderful materials. But, like, why do we not have concrete stairs and concrete slabs? Mojang, please.
Yeah.
Help us out, you know?
Yeah, I'll take that over the vertical slabs any day.
I don't know if, like, I would be happy if they added vertical slabs. Mm-hmm. But I would much rather just have slabs, stairs, walls, fences. For all the things that it makes sense to have slab stairs and walls fences for.
Yeah.
Like, why do we have stone brick walls, but not, like, I don't know, what's another one? Quartz walls. Mm-hmm. You know, why is there no smooth quartz wall?
Gotcha.
We have smooth quartz blocks and slabs and stairs, but why is there no wall or fence for it? You know, stuff like that.
Kind of feeding off that too, like, do you have a go-to build palette? Like, hey, I need a universal, this block works with just about every other block, so I'm gonna go with it.
Spruce planks, they go with everything. Spruce and stone will go with literally everything in Minecraft.
Yeah,
it's glorious. Like, and to the point where I'm like notorious for building with spruce and stone. Like, the number of spruce and stone builds that I've made over the years it's horrible. There's just so many. It's like my I have to physically, like, go out of my way to take my brain and be like, don't build out of spruce and stone. Build something different for once. You know,
I feel that way about andesite. I'm not sure what it is about the block, but especially now that it has slabs and stairs as a variant, everything has andesite in it for me.
Mm-hmm. I've always used andesite as like a mix block to mix in with other stone mm-hmm. variants.
Yeah, it's a great texturizing block.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But Jimbo, if you don't have anything, I think this is going to end the main show. We're going to go into the post show, which everyone can still listen to because it's free for Wills. Join us there. And before we go there, I'm going to go ahead and say a huge thank you to our Milk Level patrons. Omni, Croc, Obeep, Stone Figure, The Official CCL, Viperous Tuna, and YDYT. If you too would like to get access to the exclusive benefits and hour of extra content each month, consider joining at patreon.com/thewitheringeffect.
And if you like this show, you can share it with all your friends and on social media. If you listen on Spotify, follow us, or if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a nice review. Doing any of these really helps the show reach more listeners. If you'd like to get in contact with us, send an email to podcast@thewitheringeffect.com. Tweet us, leave a voice message, or join our Discord, where you can have a chat with everyone who works on the show and fellow listeners. All the links will be in the show notes.
This show has been brought to you by Jimbo and myself, but also our digital producer, Carl, and our music master, Decoy. Everyone's social media can be found down in the show notes. And again, special thank you to Wills Knight for joining us on the show. It's been so awesome.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
But also, thank you guys for listening. You have been withered with us. Now you should probably go drink your milk. Bye.